Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in India, earned a PhD in economics from the University of Florida, and overcame seemingly insurmountable odds to become an international authority on economics and a pioneer in the personal finance field. The author of 16 books, he's one of the most influential people in financial planning history and has just published his memoir, Yes, the Bee Can Fly. His name, Dr. Sid Mitra, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Sid Mitra, who's the founder and former partner of Mitra & Associates. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood growing up in poverty in India and about your mom and your dad?
Well, I was born in 1930. That was during the Depression era. And I grew up in India. That was very different from the way that you find that country today. It was still trying to get into the 20th century. That's in 1930. The childhood was happy, but we were poor. And because of that poverty, I was not exposed to many of the things that the kids in this country are exposed to. But I grew up in a loving family with my father and mother and my siblings. And things might have turned out to be very different, except for the fact that there was a physical ailment that my father experienced when I was only 7 years old. And that turned into something that could not be controlled. It became fatal, and he died. And it was a very difficult time in my life, those 2 years that I was forced to stay with them because of that reason.
You're one of 10 children. So basically, your mom raised you. You think the world of your mom. 3 of the 10 children, doctor, came to America.
That's correct.
You being one of them.
Yes.
Why were you one of the 3 that came to America?
It was because as I was growing up in India, and I did go through college education, and I did have a master's degree, but the future looked bleak. At that time, with a master's degree, I could get into a situation where it would be simply working as a clerk, maybe glorified clerk. But beyond that, there was nothing that I could see. And I didn't think that I was going to be accepting that fate. And everybody told me that I had no choice but to accept everything that came after me. But I kept on trying and trying.
And you tried, and in 1957, you came to America, Florida, with $58 in your possession. How did you, and you go to University of Florida, how did you survive, doctor, the first couple months?
It was hard. It was very hard. Even just to leave the city of Bombay with $58 in my pocket. And that was 10th of August of 1957 when I left. And when I arrived in Gainesville in Florida, that was the beginning of September. That's about 3 weeks or so. And I could not spend any money. Those $58 were sacred, and I had to conserve them any way I could. And so I sailed from Bombay, went to Marseille in France, and then traveled by train, and virtually had to live on sardines and bread, spending no more than about 4 francs per day just to survive. Fortunately, I had a friend from Bombay who was at that time staying in London. I met him, and he took care of all of the expenses when I was in London, about 4 or 5 days or so. And then I flew into New York and then took a bus and again lived on hamburgers and water, not even any cold drinks. And then coming to Gainesville, Florida, at that time, the foreign students advisor was kind enough to advance me some money so I could survive.
And the first job you ever got while at the University of Florida was 50 cents an hour doing what?
That's really funny that you asked me. The first year when I came in 1957, there was a scholarship that was granted to me that would have taken care of me for the fall and the winter semester of 1958. But then there was summer, and I was told that because I was on a student visa, I could not work anywhere except on campus. And I was late in applying for a job. Therefore, they told me that there was only one job that was available in the agricultural experimentation station. And they said that job paid 50 cents an hour. And I said, there's no choice. I have to work there. What do I do? And then the director of that station told me, that's fine, it's all set. Go ahead and pick up your gun. What? What do you mean, pick up your gun? I'm not going to kill anybody. They said, hasn't anybody told you what you're supposed to be doing? You're just supposed to be shooting the squirrels, because they had an experiment that was going on, and the squirrels were ruining that experiment, citrus. So he wound up killing squirrels.
And from that humble beginning, Dr. Sid Mitra has become one of the most influential people in financial planning history. We'll learn more. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and we're with Dr. Sid Mitra, who got a PhD in economics from the University of Florida in 1962. The U.S. Immigration Department throws you out of the country in 63. You get back in 1965. And somehow in 1966, you get a job here in Oakland County at Oakland University, a professor of economics. How'd you ever get that job?
That was an interesting twist of luck. When I got back to this country in 1965, I still had a one-year job with the University of Detroit. But I was looking for a permanent position, and immigration was still a matter of uncertainty. And so the best advice I got was that if I had a three-year position with some institution, perhaps that would be a good idea, because the immigration would look at it much more favorably than if I had only 1 year. And so that seemed like an impossible situation, but I was looking for a position like that, and somebody told me that Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, might be that institution. Oakland was not known at that time, but they had the dreams of becoming the Harvard of the Midwest. And so I came to see the chairman of the economics department, and he looked at my resume. He talked about what I could possibly do for that department. And after the day's interview, he said that he was very hopeful that he would be able to offer me a 3-year position. And I was pleasantly surprised that not only did he offer that, but instead of hiring me as an assistant professor, because I had some experience in working for the United Nations and all of that, and then I had some specialty, I got a 3-year position as an associate professor. That's how I got involved with Oakland University, and that's how I came there.
And 30 years later, you become a professor emeritus of finance, which you still are. Doctor, what makes a great teacher? What makes a great professor?
The very first advice I got on what makes a good teacher, a good professor, was from the dean of the School of Business at the University of Florida, where I graduated from. And at the end of my teaching of the first semester, I went to him and I asked him if he had any advice before I moved on. And he said, yes, let me tell you something that hopefully you can remember for the rest of your life. And I said, what's that? He said, to teach is not a transitive verb. It is a reflexive verb. And I said, could you please explain to me what that means? And he said, what that means is that you don't transmit knowledge and leave it with the students, because that is not going to be something that they can remember. Instead of that, you provide that information, make it interesting enough so that they would want to decide for themselves, reflect on it, and then decide for themselves whether or not they want to internalize it. And it's that, more than anything else, that I learned was the characteristic of being an excellent teacher. And I followed that.
You're a professor at Oakland for 30 years. You start Mitrin Associates, a consulting firm. You and Bonnie have been married over 50 years. You raise a family. And also, you write 16 books. How does one find the time, and how does one write 16 books?
If you just take only one book and then analyze what's involved in writing that book, because I'm a professor, I'm a teacher, I'm a researcher, it is my duty and obligation to publish something that doesn't exist, something in the frontiers of knowledge. So what I did was to discipline myself so that I will write at least one page per day. And I followed it for all these years. I would not let a day go by without actually writing at least one page. And if you do that, in 2 years, you have a 700-page book. And I was at the university for 30 years, so you can really do your math. That's how you can get 16 books.
Recently, the latest book is your memoir and your fascinating life. And the title is, Yes, the Bee Can Fly. Dr. Mitra, why that title?
There's a legend that a biologist once asked in Europe, a Swiss aerodynamic expert, to determine scientifically if a bumblebee with its tiny body and small wings should be able to fly. That scientist created models of airplanes matching the dimensions of a bumblebee and conducted all kinds of experiments. At the end of that, he decided, with all those calculations, he determined that a bumblebee should not be able to fly. And once I learned that, I started to look at my own life, and I came to the conclusion that even though a bumblebee should not be able to fly, it continues to fly anyway either because he does not know that he should not be able to fly, or because in its ignorance, he just continues to defy it. And I have pretty much done the same thing. I have encountered many difficulties in life, but I have conducted a relentless pursuit of impossible dreams. They were impossible, but somehow, since I continued to try, I was able to realize those dreams. That's how I decided that the best way to describe my life is to use the title, Yes, the Bee Can Fly.
If you want to pick up the book or learn more, www.aa-pub.com. On the front page of the book, Yes, the Bee Can Fly, An Ordinary Person's Extraordinary Life in a Profoundly Challenging World. And at the bottom, quote, the title of this memoir could be What's Right with America? From the foreword by former U.S. Representative Joe Nolenberg. You love America. You remember the day you left India. You remember the day you got here. What makes America, Doctor, so great?
Well, definitely there are two reasons. The country and the people. The country itself offered something to me, and I'm sure it offers the same thing to everybody else in this country. That is unique. And that is to say, it allows everyone to have the opportunity to try and fail. And if somebody fails, then that is not the end of the world. You yourself is a classic example of extending that helping hand to me. The reason why I'm here today is because you felt that I needed this to be on your show, and he invited me to do so. Even though I didn't even know you, you had no idea who I was, only just a few weeks ago.
Well, it's an honor to have you. We're with Dr. Sid Mitra, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. Sid Mitra, whose recent published memoir is Yes, the Bee Can Fly. Doctor, that last segment you said that what makes America unique is America gives you the opportunity to fail and then try again.
Yes.
These last 5 years have been tough times. We're just at the advent of a new year. If there's a listener tonight that says, I've failed, and it's not America preventing me from trying again, or people, if the truth be known, it's myself. I'm afraid to try again. I'm beaten down. What do you say to that person?
I would say to him that if you feel so beaten and you don't try, then you yourself are saying to yourself that my future is doomed. You can't blame anybody else but yourself. Somebody who thinks that things are impossible, that things are so bad that they would not be able to recover from that and achieve, I urge them to pick up a copy of this book and read it. I think they would not believe the kinds of difficulties that I've had to face in my life, and I should have given up a long time ago, but I didn't, and only because of that reason I succeeded. And so the philosophy is very simple. Pluck until luck. You've got to accept that philosophy. Pluck until luck.
100% of the revenues off this memoir are going to a foundation. What's the foundation, and why not take the revenues yourself?
One of the things that I feel very strongly about is that everyone who has succeeded in life in this country must feel obligated to give something back to this society that has treated them so well. It's just like a river. The flow of a river is going to be interrupted if people don't give something back, and the water will be contaminated. So I feel very strongly that I need to give something back to this society that has supported me all these years. That's why I decided that I should put 100% of the revenue into a charity, and that is the Community Foundation of Greater Detroit, Rochester. And an account has been opened, fund that is called Yes, the Bee Can Fly Endowment Fund. The money will go into that fund, and it will only be used at my direction to improve the financial education in this country.
Yours is an amazing story. One of 10 kids, dad dies when you're 7, abject poverty in India. You come to America, you get thrown out by the immigration department after getting your degree. You get up here, University of Detroit, then Oakland, you write 16 books. Anybody that meets you thinks you're in your 50s. You're in phenomenal shape, you look great. Sharp dresser, you're 82 years old. Dr. Sid Mitra, how have you done it?
I really haven't done, as you say, how have you done it? I don't know what that is. I simply just continue to feel that as long as I'm able to make a difference, I would continue to try to make it. Difference either in the country in which I live, or the people that I'm associated with, or anything else that I touch. So my motto is very simple: make a difference wherever I can, whichever way I possibly can. I continue to try to make that difference, and that gives me the energy that just energizes me.
You and Bonnie celebrated your 50th wedding anniversary in 2011. What's been the key to that great partnership?
It's pretty hard to say, to pinpoint one thing, but if I had to respond to that question meaningfully, I would say it's because that both of us have felt that just as you need two legs and two hands, you also need both partners equally responsible for creating a productive life. So she has been a life partner, not simply just a wife, but continues to participate in everything I do and vice versa. And I think it's that more than anything else that has led to this relationship, very productive, fruitful relationship between the two of us.
To reiterate, you look like you're in your 50s. You're slender, you're vibrant. You were born in 1930. How have you stayed in such phenomenal shape? What's that secret?
I simply learned something about myself, that I have great difficulty in losing weight. So my only hope is not to gain it. That's basically what I do. And I also feel that both mental and physical exercise are extremely important to feel good about yourself and about the world. And if I have to be able to make a difference in the world, I have to be physically fit. I cannot feel sick. I cannot feel tired and do anything that's any good. That may be the reason.
As a professor teacher for 40 plus years, you've been around young people. How have they changed, Doctor?
I just get the feeling that the young people are getting too much exposed to the evils of this world. That they are not able to think for themselves that that is only one side of the story. They don't hear the other side of the story. And therefore, we are wasting a whole generation of kids by bombarding them with nothing but negative news. I'm not saying the negative news isn't correct. It's true. It is. But that's all they're hearing. And that's basically what I think that about. It's not their fault. It's our fault that that's what we have chosen to do.
We're talking to Dr. Sid Mitra, and I'm Jack Russell, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Masula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Sid Mitra, who's authored 16 books on finance and economics, and is one of the most influential people in financial planning history. Doctor, you say that what drives you today is, quote-unquote, telling people what is right about America. Are America's greatest days still ahead of itself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that question. In fact, it's just beginning. We hear, as I said, that we hear about the bad news. But look at it another way. The achievements that we had in the 20th century were awesome. But we didn't just stop there. Now we have discovered 50 new planets outside the solar system, one of them orbiting not one, but two suns. And that's not all. Scientists now claim that subatomic particles have shattered the speed of life. That is, we live at a time when we have redefined the word, quote, impossible, unquote. America has been and continues to be at the forefront of all of these developments that are just starting to take place in the 21st century. And I honestly believe that good days are in front of us, much better than we have had in the past and would continue to be, if only we can recognize them and not simply just come to the conclusion on a daily basis that everything is falling apart, the rest of the world is advancing at a rapid rate, and we are still struggling to keep our people together, and then there are people starving, and all of those kinds of things. And as long as people think that way, then they are going to feel that the good days are over. That is absolutely not true. I don't believe that for a moment.
A couple months ago, we lost a great American, Zig Ziglar, arguably the greatest motivational speaker of our lifetime. And his motto, his philosophy of life was, you can get everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want.
Very nice.
But not true.
Yes, the... not sure that you can really demonstrate that in any way that you can then communicate with people. Zig Ziglar obviously is one of the greatest persons I've ever met. And if you keep on helping people, it's very much like knowledge. If you give your knowledge away, then you're left with more than you had before. So that's why if you can help other people, somehow you're motivated to the extent that you get something back much more than you had before you started giving.
You and God have been a great partnership. You've worked very hard to do things within his master plan that he wants. And in turn, he's really blessed you. And one of the biggest blessings was your mom. And she, very little education, but was one special person. And she had 10 commandments. And I'd like to state a few of them and give your thoughts, okay? One, if you do it, do not worry. If you worry, do not do it.
That's what she meant, that if you do something, make sure that you have considered different alternatives, different options, and you're not taking a hasty decision. But once you have made that decision, then you should not worry anymore. But if you continue to worry, that means you're not sure, then just don't do it.
Number three, giving yourself is like sharing knowledge. The more you give, the more you are left with.
Yeah, that's the one that I was referring to just a moment ago, that she used to say that if you have something that you don't need and you give that away, that is not giving. The best kind of giving is when you give yourself. But when you give yourself, you're not destroying yourself. You have more left after you give.
The 10 most powerful two-letter words are, if it is to be, it is up to me.
Yeah, those, she used to say that in an Indian language, and I translated that, if it is to be, it is up to me. Those really are the most powerful words. They have impacted on my life, and I hope they would impact on other people's lives too.
The 72-hour rule. If you have something nasty to say, immediately say it in writing. Then wait for 72 hours before releasing it.
That's very good advice, because when you're angry, when you're frustrated, when you're disappointed, then you say something that later on you regret. So if you write it down, so at least you know how you're feeling at that moment, but don't do anything with it, at least for 72 hours, then you have time to reflect.
Always remember, you are no worse than anyone else, and don't ever forget that you are no better than anyone else.
That's profound. That really is profound. Because either people feel that they are superior to other people, or they feel they're inferior. Both can hurt you tremendously. It's better to just imagine that you are no better, no worse than anybody else.
And the last one, never give up on yourself or anyone else. Miracles do happen every day.
Yes, that is very profound too, that you always believe in yourself and always believe in other people. That's why you try to help, even though it seems impossible. What seems impossible today may very well be possible tomorrow.
Dr. Sid Mitra, you're a dynamo at 82. You're an inspiration to everybody that meets you. What dreams or goals do you still have?
Still have the same dreams that I had when I got started. Continue to make a difference in people's lives, in the country in which you live, and in everybody you touch. That's my dream.
If there's a single mom tonight listening with two or three kids that says, I'm just, you know, working like crazy to keep food on the table, keep a roof over our heads, doctor, I can't make a difference. What do you say?
That is just not true. Everybody can make a difference. You just have to find a way to do so. Even if you touch somebody, even if you have a kind word, even if somebody is angry and you listen to that person, you're making a difference. Making a difference does not mean that you give somebody $1,000. That's not it. You can make a difference in many different ways, and everybody can make it.
As our time winds down together tonight, Doctor, what advice would you leave us for our young people?
I'm glad you asked that question. Let me just talk to the young people directly. My advice to you is to build a solid foundation you can use to chart your future. This foundation should stand on four strong pillars. each pillar representing an important philosophy of life. In order to make it easier for you to remember them, I will call them the A, B, C, and D pillars. A stands for always respect the elders. Remember the simple truth. You can see much farther and much deeper than your parents because you are standing on the shoulders of those who came before you and raised the bar. B stands for befriend those less fortunate. You can do so by following a simple rule. Before you spend a dollar, first set aside only 10 cents and buy a gift for someone who can't afford it. C, concentrate on two critical questions. Why and why not? Unless you understand the reason behind each act, you will become a blind follower, and that will definitely inhibit your growth. Also, if someone discourages you and says, you can't do it, it's impossible, always counter by asking, why not? Finally, D stands for do believe in yourself. If it is to be, it is up to me. So there you have it. The A, the B, the C, and D pillars of the foundation on which you can build your life. And I wish you Godspeed.
Professor Sid Mitra, what a masterful course. America's better because of your coming here in 1957. Keep making the difference every day. And keep making Bonnie and your mom proud. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. We hope you have a blessed and joyous 2013. And make it a great year, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.